Off the ball.
Rugby.
Have you seen the way Scotland play? Scotland, this has been waiting. This has been coming. They are so good. And yet I still can't sit here and say they're definitely going to win in Dublin.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 this evening. Coming up, it's a great show coming your way. We've got John Duggan joining us from Cheltenham at 7:30. So we'll hear from everybody he's been speaking to on another busy day over there. From 8 o'clock then, we're paying tribute once again to the great Ronnie Delaney. So we're going to be joined by Danny McDade, who is a two-time Irish Olympian who would have raced in the same era as Delaney, and Mike Fleet, who competed against him at the World University Games, where Delaney won gold. So two brilliant guests who's going to give us great insight into the man after 8 o'clock. And then from 8:40, we're going to get a further Ronnie Delaney story, I believe. David Brady, the man who seems to have met everybody ever. He's going to be talking Gaelic football, but I have been informed that there is a Ronnie Delaney story coming at around 20 to 9. And then between 9 and 10, as always on a Thursday, Dion Fanning is in studio for the football show. Plenty to get stuck into when it comes to Premier League sides in action in the Champions League this week, especially Tottenham Hotspur. There's just loads to talk about when it comes to Tottenham Hotspur. Our number is 087 9180 180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Arthur O'Dea is in studio. Hello, Arthur.
Hello, Owen.
And Dion, as ever, is in early for the News Round as well. Dion, how are you keeping?
Good, Owen. How are you?
The Oracle, Dion Fanning.
Correct. Thank you. Thank you for bringing this up. It's not like I reminded you of it 2 minutes ago.
No, I mean, it's something that I was just thinking about all day.
Well, Saturday, I imagine.
And on all day Saturday, you know, who do people want to hear from when it comes to their rugby predictions? They want to hear from Dion Fanning. And last week, we sat here agape when Dion Fanning made a suggestion that Ireland would only beat Wales. By how many points?
10 points.
And how many points did Ireland beat Wales by, Arthur?
10 points.
10 points on the money.
You're welcome.
We couldn't believe this conservative approach from a man who's known for his wild opinions on other matters, but
and also on rugby predictions. Yeah. I mean, predicted Ireland to beat France, but which is kind of correct prediction in some ways, like apart from being wrong.
Yes,
you know, it identified something. It identified a flaw in the French game that it took Scotland to expose.
Look, that's what people were thinking as well when Scotland beat France at the weekend. They were only thinking one name, Dion Fanning.
They were, yeah.
Dion called this back in January.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
That this French team is beatable by Ireland. But let's not get caught up on the details. Prediction for this weekend? Ireland versus Scotland? Let's just do this straight off the bat.
I'm going to say Ireland by 7 points.
Ireland by 7 points? Mm. Okay. I think that's something we can get by. I think the spread is something like... Is it three?
Is it?
Five? Okay. It's in Ireland's favour, anyway, yeah. ahead of Saturday. Do you want to stick your neck out for the other two fixtures? Like, do you think France will get beaten at home by England?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't. I think England have fallen apart.
Triple crown only for Ireland. No championship, you've heard it here first.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry. Sorry, everyone.
We do have AZ Alkmaar on the television here. Troy Parrott has scored once again for them. They are playing against Sparta Prague in the Conference League. Really nice finish. Close control in the box. Kind of powerful effort with the left foot to the roof of the Sparta Prague net. Hopefully this is the sort of form against the Czech side that'll maintain all the way through the month, Dion.
Yeah, we'd like to think so. But mainly just now at this period of time, like it's nice that Troy Parrott is scoring goals, but mainly you just want like that alert that says, you know, Troy Parrott injured is the thing that I think we all each day kind of have a sort of fear. I know I do, genuinely. Like, it's just, that's the thing you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
At this point.
No, we're single worst thing that could happen.
Yeah. Mm.
In a footballing sense, yeah.
Come on.
The single worst thing that could happen, full stop.
Yeah. That was said. That was
a groin strain after 3 weeks.
I just want to clarify that.
World War III.
Yeah.
No, but it is the worst thing that could happen for Ireland, I think.
Yeah, they're attacking there again, and Parrott was involved in that attack, but one of his teammates there going close with another effort. It's amazing how kind of invested in the AZ Alkmaar European journey we have become this season while just obsessing over Troy Parrott. Like, for example, our YouTube comments right now. Mossy's been in touch just to say Paris, which all in black caps, with kind of the hands making a love heart emoji. So that's what people are thinking right now. As I say, our number 0879 180 180, if you want to get in touch. Going to kick things off tonight with the rugby, because Ireland head coach Andy Farrell has been handed an injury blow ahead of Saturday's Triple Crown clash with Scotland. So a calf injury has ruled out James Ryan, and he's been replaced in the second row by his Leinster teammate Joe McCarthy. Dan Sheehan, Josh van der Fleer, Tommy O'Brien also come into the side. They replace Ronan Kelleher, Nick Timoney and Jacob Stockdale. Bundy Aki, meanwhile, has been named amongst the replacements, and his Connacht teammate Darren Murray could feature in the Six Nations for the very first time from the bench. And Farrell says Ryan picked up a knock in the Wales game, and they've known for a few days that he was losing the race to be fit.
Yeah, it wasn't late in the week for us. It's he had a bang during the game. We thought it was just a contusion to his calf, and we thought that was going to be fine. Sunday, Monday, he was looking out that way. But we tried to get him going. We trained Tuesday, and he didn't even get to start on Tuesday. So that was that, and the rest of the squad have trained fully. Therefore, after that, so. It's disappointing for James and disappointing for us, because he's been in unbelievable form in this Six Nations. So any type of team would miss a player like James Ryan. But as far as our preparation's concerned, it's not been too disruptive, because everyone's trained fully all week.
And Andy Farrell was also saying that Tommy O'Brien has earned the chance to start. The Leinster winger has been given the nod over Jacob Stockdale, and the Ireland head coach admitted to Darragh Smith-Nocton that it was a tough call.
We all know what type of player Tommy is. He's a type of player that attacks the game, and that's the only way he knows. And he certainly did that against England, so he deserves his chance this weekend. But also Jacob Stockdale could be proud of what he's done over this Six Nations, as far as proving to himself and to us and to everyone else that he's back at this level. I think he's made great strides as far as international rugby, getting back onto the scene, and he's very unlucky. I suppose he'd be disappointed as well not to take the field this weekend.
And Jack Holland, a similar question, is that based on his performance against Wales? Darren?
Well, he was outstanding, I thought, and he's a big game player, Jack, so he'll add 20 team.
So just to give you the Ireland 23 in full, it's Jamie Osborne at full back, Robert Balakoon and Tommy O'Brien on the wings, Gary Ringrose and Stuart McCluskey in midfield, Jack Crowley and Jamison Gibson-Park continue as the half-back pairing. Then it's Tom O'Toole once again at loose head, Dan Sheehan and Tadhg Furlong complete the front row, Joe McCarthy, Tadhg Byrne is the second row, and then it's Jack Cohn and Josh van der Fleer and captain Caelan Doris. On the bench, Ronan Kelleher is the substitute hooker, Michael Milne and Finlay Beelam delivering the backup at prop. Then it's Darren Murray, Nick Timoney as the other forwards, and it is a 5-3 split with Craig Casey, Kieran Frawley and Bundy Aki also in the team. Scotland then, they have recalled Xander Fagerson to the team, as well as Max Williamson and Grant Gilchrist, as they attempt to win Rugby Union Six Nations for the first time since 1999. So for first ever Six Nations, I guess. Injuries have ruled Gregor Brown and Scott Cummings out of their trip to Dublin. Magnus Bradbury and Kyle Rowe are named on the bench. Scotland, they haven't won in Dublin since Croke Park in 2010, but Gregor Townsend insists they're travelling with confidence.
I think the belief is there, and when we get our game right, and the elements of a game, it can put pressure on any defence. And when we get our defence in place, we can frustrate oppositions, we can get the ball back. But this is a different challenge. It'll be a different style of game than last week's. We're playing away from home, which is a big challenge in itself, and we're playing against a top quality side. And over the past few years, Ireland have played well against us. We've not always played well. Sometimes we have. 2 years ago in particular, we played very well. But Ireland seemed to play really well against us. So maybe we get that, not criticism, but we get that observation that we play really well against England. Ireland seemed to play very well against us. So that's what we're expecting. We're expecting a real physical challenge. They're a top side. Their performance against England was one of the standout performances of this year's championship. And if they deliver that, which we're expecting them to do, we're going to be very, very good to win.
What's your general take on the rugby nation of Scotland?
I like how they've played. I like that. Well, obviously that France game was sensational. And I like how Ireland always kind of beat them as well.
That was a strange framing of that. Is he suggesting Scotland are our England? Like, it's not like the Irish guys are getting up for the Scottish. I don't think that's the reason why they've won whatever it is or haven't won in like 11.
Yeah, that's a fair... I hadn't quite caught that from the clip. You think that's what he's getting at?
Well, I'd hope not. I'd hope that's not his reading of it. I mean, I'm no rugbyman, but I wouldn't...
England are our England.
Yeah.
England are everyone's England.
It's not so far as to go down that Mad Men clip of I don't think of you at all. It's not that, but it's definitely not. We're not weighing it up by what happens here. In this instance, you are because of the ramifications, but in the general run of things.
You'd have to say it's become a greater thing now than something 5-6 years ago. Just the more Ireland beat Scotland, the more aware we all become of this record, which seems a little bit weird at this point. I know Ireland have been better than Scotland in the majority of the games that they've played, but to be on the run that they're on, I think a lot of people just get great joy from this run continuing and this sort of quirk of rugby rivalries that if Ireland can continue to beat a team who should, by in theory, be not too much worse than them and close to being on a par with them. I think it's a very, very enjoyable thing from an Irish standpoint.
I don't want a thing... Well, as you're saying, like they've not won it in, 26 years?
1990, yeah. Was it?
1999, so yeah, last Five Nations.
But they last won a Triple Crown in 1990, is it?
Right. That's...
I think, you know, don't quote, you know...
Yeah. Not,
they definitely last did something in 1990.
It's a
couple... Really precise.
Maybe I'm giving them too much credit by saying that the two teams are on a par, but I don't think Scotland have ever been that much worse than Ireland, certainly in recent years. You know, like...
I get you, yeah.
We would preview with great detail the World Cup match in 2019. We would preview with great detail the World Cup match in 2023. So that's the sort of time frame I'm talking about. Basically, the potentially dozen matches in a row that Ireland have won against them. I think all throughout that period, the gap between them hasn't been massive. But obviously, if you're winning a dozen games on the spin against a team, it would suggest that there is
a
considerable gap between them.
Like, so what you're saying, on paper, it might look like there's not a big gap between them. But, you know, Scotland aren't winning things. They're not just not beating Ireland. They're not winning things in that time frame either. Like, if you know, if you're going back to, you know, the last century to when they won a Five Nations. So it's not just Ireland, but clearly there is an Irish element to it, as he's alluded to, and as Gregor Townsend has alluded to. But it's, I think, you know, when you've watched them play in this year, you kind of think, well, if this is obviously going to be a big examination for them and how they think about this game, because they're coming here, they've done things they didn't expect to do, and then this is a slightly different sort of test and something that has been a challenge for them. So I think this is one of those games where if Scotland were actually to win it, they would feel that now they were into a different kind of, on a different level.
1990 is correct. Good knowledge.
Thank you.
Last Triple Crown for Scotland. Dion Fanning, rugby correspondent here on a Thursday evening. On to the racing. We're going to be speaking to John Duggan very soon from Cheltenham, but Hart Wood has won today's feature race at the course, the Ryanair Chase. The 92 shot was ridden by Darragh O'Keefe and trained by Henry de Bromhead and eased to victory ahead of John Bond. O'Keefe, speaking afterwards, says it was an almost flawless performance.
I jumped brilliant the whole way, you know, every fence I was always jumping well, and kind of from the fifth last onwards was in the zone. He was in the zone, you know, and he's a strong stayer off this trip, so I was happy once we got eyes on the second last that we'd kick him on, and you know, I think he's been as good as ever this year, really, you know, so good performance.
I was going to venture they might be a little bit better than last season.
Yeah, you know, and we kind of thought that, you know, the John Durkin was probably a funny race in its own right, but he was really good at Tramore, obviously in calmer waters, but thought he was impressive that day, and you know, and seemed to like that ground, but you know, I thought it was impressive the way he went on about it from the second last home, you know.
Sounds like you were feeling on good terms with yourself all the way around. Were there any frights?
No, as I said, just got into a great rhythm, and he's a most brilliant jumper, you know, long or short, he's very, very good, and you know, he's still only 8, so he is probably coming into his own now, and hopefully he can keep going the right way.
Meanwhile, favourite and reigning champion Factophile didn't take part, with trainer Willie Mullins saying the ground wasn't soft enough for him to run safely. Owner JP McManus has backed Mullins' decision.
I have to say, I'm very strong in it. I walk the course every day. I just always felt it needed more water. That's how I felt. And particularly at the top of the course there, it's very beaten up from the previous runs. And, you know, you have a cross over there. It was, you know, you're only as strong as the weakest link in a course. And it doesn't matter if 80% or 90% of it is right. If 10% of it isn't right, that's good enough for me, you know. I was very happy when Willie agreed to take him out. Or I was very happy that he'd done that. You know.
Did you initiate that?
Well, it was for discussion because we were worried all week about it. It wasn't just happened today now, you know. And, you know, I think going forward, they'll have to pay more attention to parts of the track.
Elsewhere then, Home by the Lee was a 33-1 winner for the team of JJ Slevin and Joseph O'Brien in the Stayers Hurdle, and the Gordon Elliott trained Woodhoo claimed a Mayor's Hurdle under the ride of Jack Kennedy. You've been to Cheltenham a couple of times, Dion, have you?
I have, you know, once or twice. Once I remember most clearly, Monet's Garden. It was running in the first race, I think. And I someone had given me a tip from a race night. And they said, go and have a bet on this horse. And when you've got home from having the bet on the horse and you're sitting in your armchair and you've had the bet, get up and out of your armchair and go and have another bet on it. And that was the word, that was the tip I got. And I took them, I was young and I just did what people told me to do. So I did that. And I bet like a man for maybe the only time in my life.
Was this a trip of leisure?
What?
Was this a trip of leisure or were you working?
No, it was a trip of leisure. I went up for the day from London. And,
very good, very good, yeah.
And it lost by a head, I think. Like it was, you could look it up, it was narrowly beaten. And I went for a very long walk around the course. I remember that, just going.
This is the first race.
It was the first race, yeah. Felt like the first, it was like the only race as far as I was concerned. I'm going home now.
A quick Google will say Monet's Garden ran in the 2006 Arkell Challenge Trophy at the Cheltenham Festival, finishing a gallon second.
Yeah, gallon.
The white four Ustedes.
Didn't seem so gallant at the time, I tell you.
Was it a significant financial loss?
It was, you know, significant enough. Like, you know, it was. I had bet, as I said, I'd taken the advice. I'd sat down, had my bet, and then went out and had another bet. And, you know, it was. And I think, you know, I decided I wouldn't do that again. So that was my most memorable trip to Cheltenham.
A hard life lesson learned. On to the football then, and the Europa and Conference League. Nottingham Forest will be looking to put their domestic struggles to one side when they return to Europa League action. They're kicking off at 8 p.m. They're up against Midtjylland of Denmark in the last 16 while battling against relegation from the Premier League at the same time. England international Adam Wharton then believes the chance to play in Europe at Crystal Palace this season has helped improve his all-round game. And the South London club are up against AEK Larnaca at Selhurst Park in the first leg of their last 16 Conference League tie this evening. Meanwhile, US President Donald Trump doesn't think that Iran should participate at this summer's World Cup. Trump said the Iranian team will be welcome in America, but he feels it will be better they don't travel for their own life and safety. Earlier this week, Iran's sports minister said it was unlikely they would play at the World Cup amid the current conflict in the Middle East. So, I don't know, at this stage, it's looking increasingly unlikely. Just to give you some of what Infantino was saying as well today. Infantino, on Tuesday, he said, we spoke about the current situation in Iran and the fact that the Iranian team has qualified to participate at the World Cup. We all need an event like the FIFA World Cup to bring people together now more than ever. And I sincerely thank the President of the United States for his support, as it shows once again that football unites the world. Today, that President says that Iran probably shouldn't participate.
I sincerely thank the President of the United States for starting this war that might mean that Iran can't take part in the World Cup. Like, it's kind of funny because we've you know, the Infantino relationship with Trump has, you know, rightly to a certain degree become something that we just mock and laugh about. And the Peace Prize, obviously, being this, like the most ludicrous example of that. But, you know, when you see, like, the World Cup means something. The World Cup kind of matters, obviously. And, like, Infantino's relationship with Trump, the way the World Cup has become a Trump event is, you know, it's terrible what it's doing to the World Cup. And, you know, there's no way around. Like, I would, so even if one of the things about the World Cup, one of the things that FIFA have done with World Cups traditionally is, like, the host country is very much like a host. Like, you're not allowed, like, FIFA had the branding, they had the authority over it, and for better or for worse. And you often, when you go to World Cups, you're going to think, there should be more Brazil in this, or there should be more South Africa in this. But in a way, it was the FIFA World Cup, and it was the FIFA World Cup. This is Trump's World Cup. And that's what Infantino has done. And now you look back and go, God, I preferred it when it was the FIFA World Cup for all the complaints. But it makes a situation like this even more, it makes, you know, you can't look it around and say, no, come on, play in the World Cup. It brings people together. Listen, Infantino, because Infantino's in the white, he's on the board, he's at the Board of Peace, he's in the Oval Office, he's aligned with Trump. And you kind of think around, well, what else could you do but say we're not going to go to the World Cup? And that's, like, there's obviously bigger issues at stake in terms of what's happening in Iran and what's happening in the region. And Trump has lost control. I think Trump has kind of lost control of this because he clearly wants it to end now. And that's actually not a great negotiating position to be in, to actually want it to end, because Iran know that he's desperate for it to end because of the economic consequences. So on that level, like, it's a terrible situation. But in terms of football and the World Cup, Infantino should be, like, it kind of shows what a terrible, awful job he is doing, and to say it's even a job, how he has made FIFA and the World Cup an even kind of worse, in a worse condition than you could have imagined.
I have no idea about the inner workings of this Iranian football team, but when they're told by Trump that he doesn't think they should participate, would that not be a magnificent show of sort of coming back at the US if they're like, we're going to compete?
Maybe, yeah.
They probably have to defy their own sports minister, and they probably have to defy a lot of what their own country is saying. But is it not an act of protest in itself, or,
well, look, there's loads
retaliation?
Of, yeah, look, there's loads of, obviously there's plenty of issues in terms of Iran, and, like, you know, there is, like, the Iranian regime isn't something that anyone can actually come out and actually bat for or support, yeah, or make any case for. And that's, we saw what happened over recent weeks and with the protests and everything like that. And I've talked to people who've had, you know, in Iranian people who are intimately connected with that, had family involved in that. And, like, you know, at the same time, they're saying, well, this isn't what we want. We don't want an American Israel advance on this. And so you don't know what the situation is for Iranian footballers, how they feel about their own regime.
They didn't sing the anthem in 2022.
Yeah, that's right.
So you'd expect something similar to happen.
Yeah, but this is what, yeah, maybe.
You'd expect a lack of support for their own regime, their own sports minister.
You would, but I think going to, at the same time, America is now bombing, you know, is killing kids in their country.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, you can have it, like, if you're Iranian, you're not going to be saying I'm supporting the regime, but you also might be saying stop bombing schools in our country.
Is it? I appreciate there's logistics. I mean, it is a three-country host World Cup. Is it logistically impossible that their group games aren't played in, I think it's Seattle and LA, and it's just played? I mean, is anything like that even worth exploring? You'll have a greater feel for it, how it's, I know all these things are in the book so long, but.
Yeah, well, they could, I don't know, this one is, like, I suppose they could do something if they had to do it, but at some point, would you be looking at, they're going to have to, you know, reach America at a certain stage?
I suppose you're writing it off.
I do think that this World Cup, it makes it more legitimate when you associate yourself so closely with an administration, it makes it more legitimate to say, for the regime to say, we don't want our team to go there.
Just to run you through some of today's other stories, Liverpool manager Gareth Taylor says Denise O'Sullivan's knee injury is not as serious as initially feared. We've got tributes to Ronnie Delaney from Seb Coe, the president of World Athletics, hailed him as a colossus of Irish athletics. Then UEFA have opened disciplinary proceedings against Chelsea's Pedro Neto for pushing a ball boy during last night's Champions League defeat at Paris Saint-Germain. And Graham Potter has signed a new four-year contract to remain as Sweden boss beyond the 2030 World Cup. Arthur, thanks for popping in. Dion, we'll see you later on the football show. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.